We're familiar with the life of Joseph up to this point. Up to this point in Joseph's life, we could say that he has had an unfair amount of bad things happen to him. You look at the life of Joseph and you see how he was hated by his brothers. Then his brothers plotted against him, wanted to kill him. Then they decided instead to sell him, and they did, and they sold him like a piece of property. Then he was sold again. Then he was scandalized and lied about, sent to prison unjustly. Then he was forgotten there in prison by the butler. And for 2 years, he languished in that prison. So we could look at Joseph's life and say, his life seems disproportionately filled with trials. Last summer, several of us went to Alaska. And what a great time we had in Alaska. But one of the amazing things is, the sun doesn't go down until about 2 in the morning. And then it comes back out at 3 in the morning. And so it's kind of like really hard to figure out what time it is and when you're supposed to be sleeping. And when you're trying to sleep, it's light out. And you look outside and the sun is out. And you're like, well, it must be daytime. The day is disproportionately filled with sunshine, 23 hours a day. Now, if you go to a place like Finland, okay, they just came out of, maybe a couple days ago, really. I have to go check it out. They just came out of 18 hours of darkness. So December and into January, they have 18 hours of darkness and 6 hours of light. So they have a disproportionate amount of darkness. It's got to go somewhere, right? If everybody's getting sun, then somebody's getting dark, right? And it's no wonder people lose their mind, right? But, you know, we find that three-quarters of the day being dark. Can you imagine that? Three-quarters of the day being dark. You try to plan your day, and you're like, man, I woke up, and it's dark out. I went to bed. It's still dark out. I'm trying to get things done, and I'm going to work, and it's dark out. But, you know, some people have lives that seem that way. Darkness, problems, suffering, pain, loss, situations that are, difficult to live through. You know, Jacob had that outlook on his life. Okay, look over to chapter 47. So Jacob, Joseph's father, he had that outlook on his life. He had a lot of good things going on. But when he came before Pharaoh, and Pharaoh was asking him about his life, verse 7, Genesis 47, verse 7. And Joseph brought in Jacob, his father, and set him before Pharaoh. And Jacob blessed Pharaoh. And Pharaoh said unto Jacob, how old art thou? Pretty easy question, right? Pretty simple answer. And Jacob said unto Pharaoh, the days of the years of my pilgrimage are 130 years. That was the end of the answer, right? Few and evil have the days of the years of my life been, and have not attained unto the days of the years of the life of my fathers in the land of their pilgrimage. So he said, you know, I've had a rotten life. I've had a terrible life, few and evil. Few, it's been 130 years. But he had that different perspective of his life. Now, in comparison, wouldn't you say that his life was better than his son Joseph's life? I would say his life was a lot better. Joseph was lied about. Joseph was plotted against. Joseph wanted to be, they wanted to murder him. Then they sold him. Jacob just had to hear about it. And then it really didn't happen. And he got his son back. So, I mean, like, incredible happy ending, right? But no, he didn't have that perspective. So Jacob didn't have probably as many bad things happen to him, I don't think. We're not told about them. But he was bitter about his life. I want you to think about something. I want you to think about the difference between a window. That is actually a very nice window. Okay, that's Brother Jackson's window. You see why he got new ones, right? All the lead paint. And but that's actually an antique window. People pay good money for these things. Be very careful with this, right? All right, that is a window. I want you to think about the difference between a window and a mirror. Okay? Now, here's the idea of a trial coming into your life. Some people take a trial and they allow it to be a window through which they can see other people. Some people take a trial and they make it a mirror and all they can see is themselves. What are you going to do with your trial? You've got trials. I've got trials. You know, there's more trials ahead, right? Because as long as you keep living, it's just going to get more complicated, all right? You can make your trials a window through which you can see others. Joseph did that, didn't he? Or you can make your trials a mirror, and you get very introspective, and all you see is yourself. I'm talking to people tonight. Many of you have trials. I know some of your trials. Some of you, I really don't know. But many of you have trials tonight. Many of you, you've done that. You've made that a window. And you've used those trials to help other people. Maybe you get a little introspective and you start forgetting about other people, and you'll make those trials into a mirror, and you'll be a bitter person. In a mirror, you see only yourself. Through a window, you don't see yourself, you see others. It seems that suffering puts either a window or a mirror in one's life. In times of difficulty and pain and loss, we need to spend much time on our knees in prayer for others, developing an inner beauty, and see those around us and meet the needs around us. Some people, unfortunately, in their trials, take out the window through which they need to see others and the condition of those around them, and they replace it with a mirror. Brother Les, Brother Jeff, can I borrow you two guys? Okay. Brother Les volunteered. Brother Jeff, you're sitting next to him, okay? All right. Brother Les, why don't you grab that mirror right there? Stand right over here. Grab that mirror. There you go. Stand right over here. Brother Jeff, be careful. It's got lead paint. Don't eat it, okay? Now, face that way, Brother Les. Face that way. Hold that mirror right up in front of your face like you're looking in it. Okay, turn it around. That's why you look like you look like you look like tonight, okay? Here. You should have looked in that before you left the house, okay? Hold that up, okay? Now we know. All right. Okay, hold it up a little higher, Brother Jeff, okay? I picked the right guy, okay? Now, when this guy looks through his trials, what do you see? Do you see yourself, or do you see, look, they're waving at you. You see everyone, okay? Now, when you look through your trials, what do you see? No, you see yourself. Wow, that's pretty scary, isn't it? I see you too, okay? When this guy looks through his trials, all he sees is, woe is me. I've got all these problems. Look at this, okay? And this guy sees other people. I'm going to put this back here. All right, there you go. Okay. You don't do wood burning, do you? Okay, you can sit down. Thank you. All right. I learned something this morning. Don't ask so many questions. Just ask about four and then stop, okay? Because people come up with too many things. All right. Oh, thank you. Appreciate it. Let's give him a hand. Yay. All right, good. Okay, thank you. Now, when we look through the window and we see other people, we see their needs. We see their problems. We see maybe, you know what, somebody actually has it worse than I do. Somebody actually has more problems than I do. And they're doing, I don't know, they're managing, right? When we replace our window that we're supposed to be looking at the world and seeing the condition of those around us with a mirror, we can become introspective. We can live in self-pity. We see only our own pain, our own suffering, our own sorrow. We see only injustice. The world's not fair to me. God hasn't been fair to me. And they become miserable. I love singing the songs that we sing. And Brother Barnes, thank you for the biographies as well. That was an incredible biography. We need to learn about who these people are. Not our songwriters even, just our missionaries. I mean, just look at that life of a man who reached David Livingstone with the gospel and he got sent to Africa, okay? Philip Bliss. A familiar name if you sing the songs and hymns of the songbook. Philip Bliss, a singer and songwriter who wrote, these are a few, Hold the Fort, Almost Persuaded, Hallelujah, What a Savior, Let the Lower Lights Be Burning, Wonderful Words of Life. And he wrote the tune for H.G. Spafford's song, It Is Well With My Soul. He wrote this poem, Go bury thy sorrows, the world hath its share. Go bury thy sorrow, the world hath its share. Go bury it deeply, go hide it with care. Go think of it calmly, when curtained by night. Go tell it to Jesus, and all will be right. Go tell it to Jesus, he knoweth thy grief. Go tell it to Jesus, he'll send thee relief. Go gather the sunshine he sheds on the way. He'll lighten thy burden. Go, weary one, pray. Hearts growing aweary with heavier woe now droop mid the darkness. Go comfort them. Go. Go bury thy sorrows. Let others be blessed. Go give them the sunshine. Tell Jesus the rest. Go bury thy sorrows. What a great, powerful message. Imagine the emotion. Look in our text here, chapter 45 of Genesis. I want you to imagine the emotion in the first three verses. Genesis 45. Then Joseph could not refrain himself. So he gives them grain. He sends them home. He puts his cup in one of their sacks, right? He's teaching them lessons about forgiveness and about, their own selves. And so he accuses them of stealing, right? And so then, the long story, and Benjamin finally comes, and then he has them here seated according to their birthright. So they're sitting around the table in Egypt, the same way they sat around the table at home when they were growing up, and they look to the left, and there's their brother that was there, look to the right, and they're like, oh, this is really strange. How did this happen? How did we get seated just like we used to be seated back home? This is really unusual. And so they're sitting there thinking about this and all the conversations going on, and a pretty powerful conversation in chapter 44. Then Joseph could not refrain himself before all them that stood by him, and he cried, cause every man to go out from me. What do you think they were thinking? And there stood no man with him while Joseph made himself known unto his brethren. And he wept aloud, and the Egyptians in the house of Pharaoh heard. And Joseph said unto his brethren, now think about this, I am Joseph. What would you be thinking right then? Uh-oh, we're dead. I am Joseph, doth my father yet live? And his brethren could not answer him, for they were troubled at his presence. Well, I would be too. I mean, you're talking about a long, long-standing problem. I am Joseph. They're speechless. They're absolutely speechless. They could not answer him. Now, as you think about that emotion, look what Joseph says. Verse 4. And Joseph said unto his brethren, come near to me, I pray you. And they came near. And he said, I am Joseph, your brother, whom ye sold into Egypt. Now therefore be not grieved nor angry with yourselves that ye sold me hither. For God did send me before you to preserve life. You sold me, but God sent me. For these 2 years hath the famine been in the land, and yet there are 5 years in the which there shall neither be earing nor harvest, and God sent me before you to preserve you a posterity in the earth and to save your lives by a great deliverance. So now it was not you that sent me hither, but God. He said, listen, you think it's bad, and you're all emotional, and you're worried about yourself because you sold me. But it wasn't you that sent me here. God sent me here. He just used you to sell me. God sent me here to preserve life, but what he used was a trial and an affliction and a very painful thing that I could have been introspective and said, God, you're not fair. God, you're not just. My brothers hated me. They sold me. I can't believe I'm lied about and scandalized and thrown into prison. What kind of God are you? But God was using his trials to make him the man that he was. Without his trials, without his pain, without his affliction, without his injustices, there never would have been a Joseph who saved the world from famine. You sent me, but it wasn't you. God sold me. May I remind you tonight? God is in charge of your trials. God is in charge of your trials. What is it that keeps you up at night? God's in charge of that. What is it that you said, if you know, my life would be so much better if I just didn't have X, Y, and Z, right? You get three kids. No, just kidding. My life would be so much better if I just didn't have whatever it is. No, God gave you that. That is what God is using. God sent that into your life, and God is using that to make you the person that God wants you to be. God is in charge of your trials. Underline that, verse 4. Ye sold. Joseph said, I am Joseph, your brother, whom ye sold into Egypt. And verse number 7, God sent. With that knowledge, ye sold me, and God sent me. Would it be fair for Joseph to be angry at God? Would it be fair for Joseph to be angry at God if he knew that God superintended all of those circumstances and God used that to get him where he was? Would it be fair for Joseph to be angry with God and say, God, I can't believe that you're an unjust, unfair God. You've been mean to me. You've been evil to me. You treated me the wrong way. I can't believe you did that to me. No, God sent him there. It wouldn't be fair for Joseph to be angry at God. Joseph lived while he was going through his trials as if he knew the answer on the other side, but he didn't. You never find one time Joseph getting out of sorts with God. You never find one time Joseph complaining about his lot in life. You never find one time Joseph living on the wrong side of obeying God and doing what God wanted him to do, even while he was going through his trials. He came through on the other side. He didn't know about it. Neither do you and I know. Let me give you several thoughts. Joseph did not become bitter. Look, we all know bitter people. Some people get bitter over the dumbest things. Some people get bitter over things that we say, well, I can understand why they'd be bitter. They shouldn't be. But Joseph did not become bitter. It would be natural to become bitter. Can you show me anywhere in the Bible where we're supposed to do what the natural thing is to do? We are not supposed to be natural. We are supposed to be supernatural. We're not supposed to do the natural thing, the normal thing, the expected thing, the thing that comes to our mind and get bitter about things. We are to be spiritual. Look what Paul said in 1 Corinthians chapter number 4. 1 Corinthians chapter number 4. Paul was always encouraging others. He was always encouraged. 1 Corinthians chapter number 4. Let a man so account of us as of the ministers of Christ and stewards of the mysteries of God. Moreover, it is required in stewards that a man be found faithful. But with me it is a very small thing that I should be judged of you or of man's judgment. Yea, I judge not mine own self. For I know nothing of myself, yet am I not hereby justified. But he that judgeth me is the Lord. Therefore judge nothing before the time until the Lord come. Wow, that'd be a great verse to think about with our trials. Hey, God hasn't showed us what's going to happen. He hasn't showed us the answer yet. Until he comes, who both will bring to light the hidden things of darkness and will make manifest the counsels of the hearts, and then shall every man have praise of God. And these things, brethren, I have in a figure transferred to myself and to Apollos for your sakes, that ye may learn in us not to think of men above that which is written, that none of you be puffed up for one against another. For who maketh thee to differ from another? And what hast thou that thou didst not receive? Now if thou didst receive it, why dost thou glory? And if thou hast not received it, as if thou hast not received it. Now you're full. Now you're rich. You have reigned as kings without us. And I would to God ye did reign, that we also might reign with you. For I think that God has set forth us, the apostles, last, as it were appointed to death. For we are made a spectacle unto the world, and to angels, and to men. We are fools for Christ's sake, but ye are wise in Christ. We are weak, but ye are strong. Ye are honorable, but we are dishonorable. We are despised. Even unto this present hour, we both hunger and thirst, and are naked, and are buffeted, and have no certain dwelling place, and labor, working with their own hands. Being reviled, we bless. Being persecuted, we suffer it. Being defamed, we entreat. We are made as the filth of the world and are the offscouring of all things unto this day. What was Paul's attitude in all that? His attitude was joy. He said, you know what? It doesn't matter. God's going to judge everything when I see him. So I'm just going to let him take care of it. I'm just going to stay on top side. You just stay on top side. You're not the first person who had trials. I'm not the first person who had problems. We have to say, you know what? I'm not going to get bitter over the things. Everywhere Paul went, he was encouraging, and he was an encouragement to others. You ever read about Paul? Hey, greet this person, greet that person, you know, give that person a hug for me, right? He's always, you greet one another with a holy kiss, right? He's always, don't forget about this person. I want to salute that person, right? Everywhere he went, he was thinking of others. Why? Because he had a window in his life instead of a mirror. He had a window in his life that he took his trials and he looked through them at other people and he said, how can I better other people with my problems? How can I reach other people with what God has given to me? He said, I become all things to all men. I'm going to take every ingredient in my life, even the ones I don't like, and I'm going to look through that and I'm going to see, how can I help other people? How can I reach other people? How can I love other people through my trials? Look at Matthew chapter 5. Matthew chapter 5, Jesus said this, verse number 38. Ye have heard that it hath been said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, but I say unto you that ye resist not evil. But whosoever shall smite you on the right cheek, turn to him the other also. And if any man will sue thee at the law and take away thy coat, let him have thy cloak also. And whosoever shall compel thee to go a mile, go with him twain. Give to him that asketh thee, and from him that would borrow of thee, turn not thou away. Ye have heard that it hath been said, thou shalt love thy neighbor and hate thine enemy. But I say unto you, love your enemies. Bless them that curse you. Do good to them that hate you, and pray for them which despitefully use you and persecute you, that ye may be the children of your Father which is in heaven. For he maketh his sun to rise on the evil and on the good, and sendeth rain on the just and on the unjust. For if ye love them which love you, what reward have ye? Do not even the publicans the same? And if ye salute your brethren only, what do ye more than others? Do not even the publicans so? Be ye therefore perfect, even as your Father in heaven is perfect. What did Jesus say? We're supposed to bless when we're cursed. We're supposed to love when we're hated. We're supposed to give when we're taken from. So we're supposed to look at life through the window instead of looking at ourselves in a mirror. Through trials, God is trying to make us better. Joseph was better after he was sold than he was before he was sold. Joseph was better after he was sold a second time than before. Joseph was better after he was lied about. Joseph was better after he was scandalized. Joseph was better after he was put in prison. And Joseph was better after he was forgotten. Now, I can't say that would have been me, but it's supposed to be me. If you take the word better, and you write it out on a piece of paper, right? You got a bulletin, right? Just take a bulletin. Write the word better on it. Now, as you look at that word better, that E and that second E would be everyone else. I'm supposed to look through my life, through the prism of my life, through the window of my life, at everyone else. And the circumstances that come into my life are making that window. You know what window glass is made out of? Window glass is made out of sand, isn't it? Silica. But it's not just sand. If you just take a handful of sand and you stick it in a board, it's not going to turn into a window. You know what has to happen to it? Heat. Extreme heat. Intense heat. Melts that sand. You know, the problem is sometimes our life is a bunch of sand. We are made out of clay, aren't we? And God said, if you want others to see through you, or you want to see others through your life, I'm going to have to apply some heat, or you're just going to be a pile of sand. And so God brings the heat like he did to Job. And Job said, I'm being tried. I'm in a furnace. And yet I'm going to come forth as gold. No heat, just dirt. No trials, no opportunities to help others. Now, if you take that word better and you cross out the word E, the first one, and you stop living for everyone else, you start living for yourself, and you put the letter I in there, what do you get? You get bitter. You start looking in that mirror and you start looking at yourself, and all you think about is you. Oh, it's just not fair. Look at all this that happened to me. Joseph could have said that. We wouldn't have blamed him. That was Ruth. That was Ruth. Look at Ruth chapter number 1. Ruth had things happen in her life. She caused a lot of them. Her husband caused a lot of them. Then he went and died. That wasn't very nice. If you're going to cause the problems, you should at least live to solve them, right? Ruth chapter number 1. So you know the story of Ruth. I'm not going to give you a whole Bible study on it tonight. You know it. But as Ruth leaves the house of bread, sojourns in Moab. Her sons marry idol-worshipping girls. Her husband dies, Elimelech. Mahlon and Chilion, both of her sons, die. Orpah stays there. And Ruth says, I'm going to go back with you. Your people will be my people. Your God will be my God. Naomi and Ruth come back to Bethlehem. And look, if you would, at verse number 19, chapter 1. So they too went until they came to Bethlehem. And it came to pass when they were come to Bethlehem that all the city was moved about them. And they said, is this Naomi? And what does that word Naomi mean? Pleasant one. Is this the pleasant one? Is this the lady who always had a song everywhere she went, a smile on her face and a joy in her step? Is this the kind, giving, caring lady, the pleasant one? And she said unto them, call me not Naomi, call me Mara, which means what? Bitter. Like the bitter water that Moses had to cast the tree into to make it sweet. Call me Mara, for the Almighty hath dealt very bitterly with me. I went out full, and the Lord hath brought me home again empty. Why then call ye me Naomi, seeing the Lord hath testified against me, and the Almighty hath afflicted me? Now keep your place in the book of Ruth. Let me say this. Without Naomi's trials, there would be no Messiah. Look at chapter 4. Ruth couldn't see, or Naomi couldn't see this in chapter number 1. But after she finally got straightened out, look at chapter 4, verse 13. So Boaz took Ruth. Now Ruth would have never been in Bethlehem, Judah, if Naomi hadn't lost her husband and lost her two sons. Now Ruth is here. Then Boaz took Ruth. Hey, if Naomi hadn't stopped focusing on Naomi and looking in that mirror and instead said, hey, I'm going to pour my life into this daughter-in-law of mine. I'm going to pour my life into Ruth. She's got a future ahead of her. I'm not going to ruin her life and take us both down to the bottom of the ocean. I'm going to stop looking in that mirror and I'm going to look at that window. Hey, Ruth, why don't you go out and glean for us? And hey, who's that guy that you met? Boaz. Hey, he's a kinsman. Hey, this is awesome. This is a great love story. And she started picking up her chin a little bit and seeing other people. So Boaz took Ruth, and she was his wife. And when he went in unto her, the Lord gave her conception, and she bare a son. And the women said unto Naomi, blessed be the Lord, which hath not left thee this day without a kinsman, that his name shall be famous in Israel, and he shall be unto thee a restorer of life. And verse number 17, and the women, her neighbors, gave it a name, saying, there is a son born to Naomi, and they called his name Obed. He is the father of Jesse, the father of David. You mean without Naomi's trials, there would be no Messiah? Yeah, that's right. Oh, God could do anything he wants. But who did God use? God used a bitter woman who got over her bitterness and said, you know what, I got to stop looking in this mirror. That's going to be the end of my life. And that's going to be the end of her life. And that's going to, who knows where that, what a end of the story stopper. She couldn't see that Obed would be born. The fate of the future salvation of the entire human race was at one time in the hands of one bitter woman. Hey, can I say this? Hey, Naomi, you better get over that bitterness. You better get over that thinking only of yourself and, oh, woe is me, God has done me wrong. That's what she said. God took everything away from me. No, he didn't. But that's what you think when you get bitter. The fate of future salvation, of your salvation, hung in the balance that day. If you think about it, Jesus was born of the house and lineage of David, who came from Obed, who came from Ruth, who came from Naomi getting over her bitterness. Look at chapter 41 of Genesis. Thank God, Naomi didn't stay bitter, she got better. She invested her life into someone else, and that someone else was Ruth. She made her mirror into a window. Genesis 41. Joseph learned a lesson. In chapter 41, Joseph is married, and he has two boys. In chapter 41, in verse number 49, and Joseph gathered corn as the sand of the sea, very much, until he left numbering, for it was without number. And unto Joseph were born two sons before the years of famine came, which Asenath, the daughter of Potipharah, priest of On, bare unto him. And Joseph called the name of the firstborn Manasseh. For God, said he, hath made me forget all my toil and all my father's house. That was what his name meant. He had a baby boy. What are you going to name him? I am going to name him God hath made me forget all of my toil and all my father's house. What was he talking about? He wasn't talking about I'm forgetting who my daddy was. He said, I'm going to forget what my brothers did to me. I am going to forget and I am going to forgive. And every time I call that boy, hey, Manasseh, come here. God hath made me forget all my toil and all my father's house. Every time that boy was playing ball with his daddy, he said, hey, God hath made me forget. Go catch that ball. Hey, God hath made me forget all my father's house. Why don't we do this today? Hey, come to supper. God hath made me forget. What a memory. Oh, but it doesn't stop there. And the name of the second called he Ephraim. For God hath caused me to be fruitful in the land of my affliction. Every time Joseph had those two boys, the one Ephraim and one Manasseh, their names mean something. Manasseh, God hath made me forget all of my affliction. If you are going to be what God wants you to be, you're going to have to develop amnesia about some things. God, make me forget all of my affliction. God, make me forget all of my father's house. They've done me wrong, but I forgive them. And I'm going to be the person that God wants me to be because God sent me here. You didn't send me here. It wasn't because you mistreated me that I'm the person I am today. God put me here. It wasn't because of the way you sold me and you lied about me and you scandalized me and you threw me into prison, Potiphar's wife. That wasn't it. That was God put me there so I could minister in prison. God put me there so I could reveal dreams, so I could reveal a dream to Pharaoh one day. I'm not going to look at life through a mirror. I'm going to look at life through a window. Oh, it's so hard to forget about sometimes. I'm not minimizing your pain, but stop looking in that mirror all day long. Hey, you know what you see in that mirror? Wrinkles. The longer I look in the mirror, the less I like what I see. The less I see, right? My hair is going away. My eyes, I can't see much. Wrinkles. All you see in that mirror is stuff that you can get sad about and stuff you can get depressed about and discouraged about. But when you look through that window and you start seeing other people and helping other people, they don't care if you have wrinkles. They don't care if you have wrinkles. I don't care if you lost your teeth and you got one eye and you got no hair, you're bald as a cucumber. They don't care. They just need somebody to love them and somebody to help them and somebody to care about them because they have wrinkles. Stop looking at your wrinkles. Here's a little saying my wife gave me years ago. She got it from somebody else. Hey, when you look in the mirror in the morning, fix yourself up, then forget yourself. Mrs. Evans said that, lady who had cancer. They would literally carry her into my class, to teach class. They would carry her in on like a stretcher chair, and they'd prop her up, and she'd teach class for 45 minutes. You know what her favorite verse was? Philippians 4:4. And she'd say, class, Miss Jackson, you remember that? Repeat this verse. Rejoice in the Lord always, and again I say rejoice. Here's a lady who had like stage 4 cancer, and like cancer a couple of 10 times or something like that. She wrote a book about it, Cancer, My Enemy, My Friend. And she'd sit up in front of that class, and I'm sitting there. It's Monday morning. I'm tired, right? I've been up till 2, 3 in the morning. I'm like, ugh. And they dragged Mrs. Evans in, and I looked at her, and I went, I don't really have any problems. Rejoice in the Lord always. And again, I say rejoice. She's got no hair. She's got a wig on, right? Because she lost all her hair through chemotherapy. And I'm thinking, if she can rejoice, I dead sure should rejoice. She's making me happy. And she shouldn't even be happy. She shouldn't even be here. They would bring her into the choir loft before church because she was so sick. She'd be vomiting and everything, right? And she couldn't even come to church, but they would bring her into the choir loft and they lay her down on the floor so she could hear the sermon through the speakers. And then after the sermon, they'd carry her out and she'd go home again. Now I remember when that happened. Here's a lady who was just terminally ill and eventually she got cured. She went to heaven. Fix yourself up, then forget yourself. Hey, maybe we need to do that in more ways than one. Maybe we need to do that cosmetically, but spiritually. Look at chapter 50. Chapter 50. God hath made me forget. God hath made me forget my trials, my toils, my problems, the injustices, all my father's house. Now his father dies. His brothers are worried. Hey, maybe Joseph was just holding on, you know, to a nice family thing while dad was alive. And now that dad died, he's going to kill us. He's going to pay us back. That's what they thought. And Joseph said this in chapter 50, verse number 19. And Joseph said unto them, fear not, for am I in the place of God? But as for you, ye thought evil against me, but God meant it unto good to bring to pass as it is this day to save much people alive. You know, if I look at my trials, I'll say, you know what? God meant these for good. God meant, look at, can I tell you something? This trial right here is actually bigger than the one that Tamir. See that? It's actually bigger. I've got a bigger problem here than I would have there, but if I look through this and say, how can I help other people? I'll get more out of my big trial than I would out of my little trial if I just look at myself. God hath made me forget all of my affliction, all of my problems, all of my past, all of my trials, all of my father's house. Joseph said, you meant it unto evil, but God meant it unto good. Hey, Job's trials came and Satan meant it unto evil, but God meant it unto good. Turn those trials around and say, you know what? I am not going to walk on my bottom lip all day. I'm not going to just look in that mirror and feel sorry for myself and be woe is me. And God hasn't been fair to me. I'm going to say, I don't know what God's trying to teach me out of this, but I want to make it something good. I want to make good happen because of this. How many people, look, the world knows that. How many people in the world wear a little ribbon, right? To help cure cancer. Why? Because somebody in their family had cancer or maybe died. And so what do? They raise millions of dollars and they do new research and they find new medicines and they come up with new procedures and they come up with new tests and they try to solve these sicknesses that people are getting all around the world and people are dying from. And they say, you know what? In my problems, I could just sit here or I could become a tool that is used to help somebody else in the future. There are people alive today because other people said, you know what? Let's help. Let's find a cure for this. You're never going to think about others if you're always thinking about yourself. You have one brain. Use it to think of others. You have one mind. Let's make it the mind of Christ. Ephraim, God hath caused me to be fruitful. Where? In the land of my affliction. Every time he called his two boys, hey Manasseh, God hath caused me to forget all my problems and my father's house. Hey, forgiveness, come here. I just need to hug you for a while and remember I'm forgiving my brothers. And now because I forgive, God can make me fruitful. If you don't forgive, you don't have the first boy, you're not going to have the second boy. He named them in order. You've got to forgive first. You've got to forget first. Then you can be fruitful. God hath caused me to be fruitful in the land of my affliction. I'm done, but I'm going to read to you a poem. The author is unknown, but it's called The Divine Weaver. My life is but a weaving between my Lord and me. I cannot choose the colors. He worketh steadily. Oft times he weaveth sorrow, and I in foolish pride forget that he seeth the upper and I the underside. Not till the loom is silent and the shuttles cease to fly shall God unroll the canvas and explain the reason why. The dark threads are as needful in the weaver's skillful hand as the threads of gold and silver in the pattern he has planned. Make your life a window and not a mirror. Let's pray.